Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem and welcome back to today's Daf Yomi, which is Erev Daf Yutes, right on top of the Amud, says the Gemara. Va'omer Rabbi Yirmiyah ben Elazar, Boirei, come take a look, Shaloi Kimidas HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Midas Basar Adam. The way, the manner in which a person relates to Hashem is so different than the way he relates to a human being. Midas Basar Adam, the method which is employed amongst humans, is as follows. Mischayev Adam Harigel Malchus. If a person is slated for capital punishment, what do they do? Matil Lechika Usaych Piv. They place this wooden frame into his mouth, this muzzle. Kadesh Lechikal Samelach. So that he's not able to curse the king out of resentment. In contrast to the way a person relates to Hashem, Midas HaKadosh Baruch Hu. A person is guilty of hariga. He's going to get killed on account of the fact that he did avera. How does he respond? Shoisik. He remains quiet. He accepts it with perfect faith. He knows it's for his good. He knows it's meant to cleanse him of his averas and to earn him the eternal olam haba. Shenarma lecha dumia sehila. To you, dumia, all are quiet and accept it with faith. V'loyoid. Not only is he quiet, elishem shabeach. He praises Hashem. Because he knows it's merely an expression of Hashem's love and kindness. Shenema tehila, l'cha dumia, tehila, even praise. V'loyoid, not only that, el shedoim loy. A person relates to it, kilu makrav kavar, as always giving a kavan. Shenema l'cha yushulam neder, as always paying a neder to you, Hashem. Let's take a look at Rashi who explains this. Two lines from the top. L'cha dumia, hakol shoyskin kenegdech, all are quiet towards you. Shadayma Olaf. So it appears to the person as though he's bringing a carbon. Noichun lo yisurin. Shemekabal ma'ahava. He accepts with love all the hardships, yisurim, the tribulations. He knows it's for his benefit to cleanse him of his averis. Lucha yishulam neder. Oysu dumia. This quietness, shudayma bi yisurim, that he is quiet when he experiences yisurim. Doima lo yishulam neder. It appears to him like he's paying a vow, a neder, like a carbon, because he avoids resentment. He sets aside his emotions and his feelings and overcomes that, sacrifices that tendency to have resentment and gives that away to Hashem, so to speak, as a carbon. Instead, accepts it with love, with ava, and praises Hashem. Not only that, he knows that it's like a carbon. The yisurim are mechaper on him like a carbon, which will earn him his eternal olam haba. So it appears to the person, the yisurim appear like a carbon to mechaper and to grant him olam haba. Continues the Gemara. Hainu domer Yeshua ben Levi. This is compatible with Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, who told us. My dechsev. How do we explain the pasuk? Oyvrei be mekabocha mayon yishisu gam brachos yatemir. Explains as follows. Oyvrei, the first word in the pasuk. Oyvrei elu bnei adam sheoyvin. Our return shall Kadosh Baruch Hu. People who are oivan is rotzen do averis. Emek. That's the next word. Emek means shema mikunem gehenim. They make them a very deep gehenim. Habacha. That's the next word. Sheboichen umeridin dmois. They cry and shed tears out of pain. Kemayin shall shisim. So next words in the pasuk is mayin yishisu. So they shed lots of tears like the mayin, like the spring shall shisim. Rashi describes this as the hole underneath the Mizbeach where they would pour water. So an abundance of tears are shed. Nevertheless, they acknowledge and appreciate what Hashem is doing to them. Gam brachos yate meire. They endow Hashem, the meire, the judge, with brachos. Shematzdikin aleihem sadin. They justify upon themselves the judgment of Hashem, the oynish. And they tell Hashem, Ribbono shel Olam, yafedanta. You've correctly judged us. The innocent person, you correctly held him innocent. The guilty person is correctly, he's correctly being held accountable. It's good that you are machayev him. You correctly established Gehenim for the Rishayim and Gan Eden LaTzadikim. So even the Rishayim, when they get to that point, they acknowledge, they appreciate what Hashem is doing to cleanse them and to grant them the ultimate kindness and goodness of the eternal Gan Eden. Says the Gemara, is that the case that the Rishayim in Gan Eden do tshuva and they acknowledge and appreciate what's happening? Any? Is that so? V'amar v'shem malakish Rishayim? You know what happens to them? Afilo al pisach shel Gehenim. Even when they're at the Pesach, the entrance to Gehenim, even though they see reality right in front of them, nevertheless, their desires are so overwhelming. Einam chayzim b'tshuva. They don't do tshuva. Shenamar v'yotzav aro v'pigri anoshim ha'poshim bi. I'll go out and see the people there that are pashay on me. And the pasuk continues describing the fire of Gehenna which rages on and on. V'isham lo yisichve. It won't be put out. So the pasuk describes the Rishayim in present terms. Shepashu lo yinamar. It doesn't say that they were pashay in the past. Ela ha'poshim. Hapoishim denotes something in the present. Shepoishim olchon la'ilam. They continuously sin. So apparently, even when they're holding at that point, they don't do tshuva. It says maloi kasha. It depends what we're speaking about. It's not difficult. Ha'bepoishim Yisrael. The first description was speaking about the sinners of Klal Yisrael. So a yid is inherently good. Deep inside, he's toif. So as soon as the Gehenim erases the Averis, removes those layers of Avera, the goodness shines out and he appreciates. He knows what's really good for him, the closeness of Hashem, and he thanks Hashem for cleansing him. So that's describing the Poshi Yisrael. Ha! The second description here regarding the fellows who even by Gehenim, by the Pesach of Gehenim, still maintain their erroneous mode of behavior, is speaking about Ha'v'poshe'oidekechavim. So this concept won't apply to them. It says the Marachanami Mestavra. It seems indeed that this is a logical approach. That this pasuk here of the Anoshim Ha'poshim Bi, describing the ongoing Pshia, and the pasuk there describing the raging fire which continuously burns on and on, apparently is speaking about the Poshe'oidekechavim, not the Yisrael. Why? Because otherwise we have a problem. Din Kain, because otherwise Kasha. We'll have a kasha from this Rish Lakish on another Rish Lakish who tells us that even the Poshi Yisrael, their experience in Gehenim is only a temporary one. They get cleansed and they move on. So apparently, it can't be that the pasuk here is describing the Poshi Yisrael who sit on and on in Gehenim and the fire keeps on burning. The Omar Rish Lakish. Poshi Yisrael ein ur Gehenim shaletes b'hem. The fire of Gehenim is not shaletes b'hem, doesn't destroy them. Kavachayim mizbeach hazav. We learn it from the mizbeach hazav, the golden mizbeach, which was in the Beis Hamikdash, which was gold plated. Ma mizbeach hazav. Since we find the mizbeach hazav she'ein alav elo koivi dinar, although it only had a thin layer of gold, a thickness of a dinar of a coin, koivi dinar zav. Nevertheless, it survived all that fire, all that burning. Amad kamesh shanim, it stood for many years, but they shelter by ur, and the fire didn't destroy it, didn't burn it out. Poshi Yisrael, certainly the poshim amongst Klal Yisrael, shemalei and mitzvahs kerimah, that are filled with mitzvahs, like the seeds of a pomegranate. Shenemar kifel kerimah nakasech. Your temple is like a slice of a pomegranate. V'amrim shem alokish, atuki rakasech. Instead of reading rakasech, read as follows. Elo rei kasech. The empty ones amongst you. Shafilu rei konim shebach. Even the empty ones amongst you, amongst Klal Yisrael, those that engage in inappropriate behavior, they are still filled. Melei and mitzvahs kerimai. So since they have all that spiritual content, certainly they're meant to be protected from the fire of Gehenna, machas kama v'kama. Certainly the fire of Gehenna cannot destroy them. So apparently, that pasuk describing the Rishayim and Gehenim who are sitting in the fire on and on and on, the fire is totally controlling them, is evidently not speaking about Poshi Yisrael, rather the Poshi of the Gechavim. Continues the Gemara, Ella, if so, Hadech Siv Oimri Bemekabocha. How do we explain the earlier description there that they're going to be in Gehenim, acknowledge Hashem's kindness, the Matzik Sadin? We just said that the fire of Gehenim is not Shilat via on the Rishayim. Says why it's only a temporary phenomenon. Ahu the Mechaveh Shata B'Gehenim. They were given a sentence, a temporary short-term sentence in Gehenim, but it's only temporary. V'asi Avram Avinu comes along, go masaklu, and takes them out. picks them out of Gehenna, and accepts them, meaning he salvages them from Gehenna. So their stay in Gehenna is merely a short, temporary one. So Avraham Avinu does this to everybody, bar except me, Yisrael Shabba, Al Bas Ovid Kechavim, a Yid who had relations with a guy, the Mashcha Arlasai, because his Arla gets pulled, gets stretched over his Mila, and Avraham Avinu doesn't recognize him due to his Avera, which creates its spiritual effect and blocks his Mila, so to speak, so Avraham Avinu does not recognize him and can't take him out. Continues the Gemara, Maskevler of Kahana. He disagrees. He says the pasuk there, which said "V'ro bepigri anoshim ha'poishim bi," which Rishon Malakish told us is in the present term, meaning they're ongoing pshia even when they're at the Pesach of Gehenna. He disagrees, Rav Kahana. He says "Hashad the amrus ha'poishim," that the word ha'poishim means something that's ongoing, the pashiv azli. If so, how are you going to explain the following pesukim? Ela ma'ata d'chsiv. Hamoitzi v'amala, the pasuk says that Hashem is moitzi eschem eretz Mitzrayim. The other pasuk says he's mal eschem eretz Mitzrayim, referring to something in the past. Are you going to say it's ongoing? The masik Hashem lifts us out of Mitzrayim, the mapik, and constantly, continuously takes us out of Mitzrayim. The masik, the mapik, who? Ella, rather, something in the past. The asik, he picked us up out of Mitzrayim, the apik, and took us out. Something in the past. Hachanam here as well, even though it says Hapoishim, it's referring to something in the past, the Pashihu, something which they did in the past. Continues the Gemara. Vomar b'yirmiya b'arvelaz. Shloisha p'sachem yesh l'gehenim. There are three entrance ways to Gehenim. Echad b'midbar, one in the desert, v'echad b'yam, one at sea, v'echad Yerushalayim, and the third on Yerushalayim. Explains the Maharsha, the point here is a person should never think that he could run away from his averus and not held accountable. So these three, Midbar, Yam, Yerushalayim, correspond to three different parts of the world. The world is split into three different categories. Uninhabited, which is referenced to as Midbar, the inhabited portion, which is referenced to as Yerushalayim, built up areas, and sea. So the message here is, a person cannot run away from accountability. The Gehenna is present all over. There's a Pesach in the Midbar, the Yam, and Yerushalayim. How do we know this? B'midbar d'chsiv v'yerdu heim v'chol ha'shelahem is referring to the Bnei Korach. They will go down chayim sho'ila. So sho'il here is referring to the depths of Gehenna, and this took place in the Midbar. B'yam, what do we find? That the Pesach of Gehenna is also at sea, d'chsiv, by yoina, mi beten sho'il shivati v'shamata koili. So he was sitting in the belly of the fish, and he said, "Mibeten Sho'il," referring to Gehenna. So apparently he passed by the Pesach of Gehenna, which was at sea. Be Yerushalayim. How do we know that there was one Yerushalayim? The Chsiv and Um Hashem, Asher Urloi Betzion V'Tanu Lebi Yerushalayim, V'Tanu Dvei Bishmol. And Dvei Bishmol explained as follows: Asher Urloi Betzion Zu Gehenna. This is referring to the fire of Gehenna, which is in Tzion. V'Tanu Lebi Yerushalayim, the fire, this oven that's burning. Zupischa shall Gehenim. So we find that Gehenim relates to Yerushalayim as well. V'suleka, there's no other Pesach other than these three. V'amar Rav Marion, Amar Shimon Levi, V'amar some say Tana Rabba Bar Marion b'Devei Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai. So in the Beis Medrash of Yochanan Zakkai, he taught this following thing: Shtei Tmorois Yesh Begei Ben Hinnom. There are two palm trees in this canyon, this Gei called Gei Ben Hinnom, which is by Yerushalayim, Voy la'ashem b'meineyem, and there's smoke arising from between these two palm trees, v'zui shashaninu, and in reference to these palm trees, we learned the following Mishnah, Tzinei harabarzak sheris, the lulav which is taken from these palm trees, akasha to be used, despite the fact that they have short leaves. So it's these two palm trees, v'zui pisa shagehenem, and this is the entranceway to Gehenna. So you see, there's another entranceway. Says Rama Dilma, perhaps, Hayin Yerushalayim. Actually, this is the one mentioned earlier, the Pesach of Yerushalayim. Continues the Gemara, Omer Shom Alevi, Zayin Shemuis Yesh L'Gehenna. Gehenna is referenced to in seven different ways. He has seven different names. So I think in the name of the Maharsha, that this corresponds to the Gemara in Sukkah, which tells us that the Yetzer Hara has seven different titles, which means that he employs seven different methods of enticing a person to lead him astray, and indeed to lead him to the terrible consequences. These seven different types of Gehenna I'm described here. So we have seven names. Ve'eluhen, these are the seven names. She'oil va'avadoin. The third one is Uber Shachas. Then Uber She'oin v'tetayavein v'tzalmaves v'eretz atachtis. These are seven names. The Gemara is going to find the sources for all seven. She'oil, meaning the depths. Where do we find that in reference to Gehenna? Chsivim betn She'oil shivati shemata b'koili. This was the pasuk mentioned earlier referring to Gehenna. Avadoin, loss. Is your chesed going to be described when a person is a caver? Your faith in ba'avadain, referring to loss, referring to Gehenna. Be'er shachas, the pit of destruction. That's another way of calling Gehenna. You will not leave my nefesh l'sho'il to Gehenna l'sitein hasitcha. Literally shachas, you will not allow your chesed to see shachas, this destruction, which is Gehenna. Uboor Shoin Vitit Hayavin. These are another two names. Chsiv Ayaleni Viboor Shoin. Hashem took me out of this pit with raging water. Mitit Hayavin. This mud. Hayavin. Rashi says is a type of refish, type of tit of mud, which one can sink into. So we see that this is in reference to Gehenna. With Salmavis, where do we find that? Chsiv Yeshvi Choshech with Salmavis. Those who sit in darkness. And some of us here in reference to Gehenna. Ve'eretz HaTachlis, the seventh and final name. Gemarahu. This is learned from Gemara tradition. We don't have a pasuk, but we know this is the seventh name of Gehenna. Says Gemara, only seven, Mesuleka. Don't we have another one, Vayikra Gehenna? Says the Gemara, that's not really a name. That is referring to, that's describing the circumstance. Gay, it's a deep pit, a deep canyon, Shamuka, a deep pit. Shakol yoyred lo'al iskei chinam. That all go down, descend into Gehenna, due to nothingness. Iskei chinam actually describes as arroyos, which is averis that come as a result of just fantasy and imagination. It's just chinam. So Gehenna is just describing the reason why hakol yoyred lo. It's a gay, a deep area, which comes about through henam, hinam, chinam, nothingness. So it's a punishment for nothingness. Says the Gemara, but there's another name. Va'ika tifte, dechsiv, ki oroich, mi esmoil, oruch, mi esmoil, tofte. So it's describing Gehenna. Says the Gemara, that also is not really a name. It's telling us as follows. Ahu, that pasuk is just saying, shekol mespata b'yitzre. One who allows his Yetzirah to convince him and lead him astray, yibal sham, he will fall there. So we describe the seven titles of Gehenna. Let's move on to Gan Eden. Gan Eden. Now, we know Gan Eden is also to be found in this world. As the Rambam in Pirshat Mishnah in Sanhedrin, I believe in Perek Chelek, he says that the concept of Gan Eden is also to be found in this world. It is the most beautiful place full of luscious fruits, most beautiful place on earth, which is hidden from view, beyond access of ordinary human beings. That's where Adam Rishon was until he did the Chet Veitz Hadas and he was sent out of Gan Eden. So the Gemara is going to explore regarding the location of Gan Eden. Gan Eden, Amar Shlokesh, Im Eretz Yisrael, if it is to be found in Eretz Yisrael, Beis Sha'an Pischai, then the Pesach of that Gan Eden must be Beis Sha'an, as Rashi tells us, because the fruit of this location, of this city, is so much sweeter than the other fruits in Eretz Yisrael, it must be that it's because it's near the Pesach of Gan Eden. Vim be'arvia, if the Pesach of Gan Eden is to be found in Arvia, beis gram pischai, the Pesach must be in that place which has very special fruits. Vim be'in anaharisu, if that's where he is, dum saknin pischai, then the Pesach must be dum saknin on account of its high quality fruits. Be'bavel, where were the high quality fruit found in Bavel? Abai would praise Vipiri, the Mavar Yamina, the fruit that grew on the river side. Mavar means the side of the river, of a Pras river. Yamina on the south side. Rava Mishtabech, he would praise Vipiri, the Harpanya, the fruit that grew in Harpanya. And perhaps this was also due to their close proximity to the entrance of Gan Eden. Continues the Gemara. Ubeinein kemle shtei revokos. This is going back to our Mishnah, which told us that oisin pasin lebirois. When we construct posts around the wells which are found in Shisarabim, to allow drawing water from the well which is Shisayachet to the area outside the well. So by placing these four posts, these double posts, these L-shaped posts on all four corners, the area within them turns into Shisayachet and allows drawing water. Let's perhaps take a quick look at the Mishnah again, a part of the Mishnah, which will introduce us to the upcoming Gemara. Mishnah back on your diamond base, five lines from the bottom, beginning with the line Ubeinein. So how much space in between these posts? Ubeinein kemolesh teravokos shal shalosh shalosh baka. You allow enough space for two revokos. Revoka is a group of animals. So you allow room for two of these groups, with each group containing three bakar, three cows. Divrei Rav Meir, this totals actually 10 amos, which is a sheer Pesach. Rabbi Da'imer, you can allow for a larger space. Shel Arba, each one of these two groups has four animals, which totals a share of 13 amma and a shlish. So 13 and a third amos. And the Mishnah proceeds, Kshurois v'lo mitoris. The revaka, this group of animals, is actually tied together. It's sure, the animals must be tied together, limitors, not let loose. So when they're tied, they actually occupy less space. Achas nechneses v'achas yoytzis. One group is on its way in, one on the way out, meaning you have to allow for two-way traffic, which needs a little bit more space to accommodate the traffic. And the Mishnah continues, muta lakav lebe'er. You can place them very close, the posts very close to the bear, but must leave some space. V'vashtei para roisha v'ruba b'fnim v'shoysa. Provided there's enough space for the parah's head and most of his body to enter and drink. This will eliminate the concern of the owner being tempted to take his pail outside of the contained area to feed his animal. So that's the Mishnah. Continues the Gemara. Three lines from the bottom. Ubeinein kemolei shtei revokos. So in between these posts, you leave room for these two groups of animals, which are tied. Each group is tied. Kshur is veloy mutar, it's not untied. Now this seems to be redundant. Pshita, of course, given the tongue like kshur is havo. Once the Mishnah says they're tied, anon yadinon, the loy havo mutaris. Certainly we know they're not untied. So why the redundancy? Says one ma'u the tema, perhaps I would think. Kshurais, when we say kshur is, we don't mean actually tied. Kain kshur is. They're walking very close to each other, it's like they're tied. Aval mamash loy, they're not actually tied together. Kamash malon v'loy mutaris. That's why the Mishnah repeats itself. Kshurais v'loy mutaris, not untied. We mean literally tied together, in which case they take up less space. Achas nechneses v'achas yoytzes. Tana v'loy to the b'raisa. Revaka nechneses, revaka yoytzes. A group going in, a group going out. Meaning, it's not the individual animals which are going in and out, in which case they would need much more space, but it's the groups that we're speaking about. One group going in and one group going out. So you need to leave that space, the amount of the roish and the roiv of the par, between the post and the bear. So how much is that in the area? Shtei amos. You need to leave a space of two amos on either side of the bear, between the bear and the post. Now we spoke about the area between the posts, accommodating the groups of the animals. Now, how wide are those animals? Become of each par. What is the thickness of each par? Amma, u'shnei shlishi amma. One amma plus 2/3. Shehein ke'eser. Divrei Rav Meir. So according to Rav Meir, there's six animals. Multiply that by 1.2/3. You come out with a total of approximately 10 ammas. Rabbi Da'imer ke'shlishi shri amma, ke'abra shri amma. According to Rabbi Yehuda, it's eight animals in total. Times 1 2/3. So you come up with a total of approximately 13-14. Let's take a look at Rashi. Top line in Rashi, Shein Keser Amos, Shisha Bakar. According to Rav Meir, 6 Bakar times 1 2/3, which equal approximately 10. Come on, Parach. Soon the Gemara is going to ask, Mai Keser, what do you mean approximately 10? Ha'eser Mechavon HaSein, it's exactly 10. Rabbi Yehuda says, it's 13-14. Shmoina Bakar, 8 Bakar, Yotzu Mechal Shleish Esrei. It's beyond 13 amos. Uchlal Yudal Leibo hadn't yet reached 14 amos. Why? Yudgimel amo shlishen. They total 13 and a third amos. Says the Gemara on the second line. Ke'eser? So according to Ramey, it's approximately 10. Her eshavin, it's exactly 10. So why use an approximate term? Says what you're right. But the term employed here was on account of the fact that the Braisa wanted to apply that term in the next portion of the Braisa. Meshum de boy the mitzvah sefer. Since the Braisa wanted to proceed and say, regarding Rabbi Yehuda, kishleish esrei, therefore, the Reisha also employed that approximate term. Says Mar, but why kishleish esrei by Rabbi Yehuda? Kishleish esrei, tfrei havin. It's actually more than 13. Generally, when you say approximately, it implies that it's perhaps not that much, but less. It's approximately that much. And here, it's actually more than 13. So why say kishleish esrei? Says what you're right. Mishum de boy le misne karba esrei. Because the Braisa wanted to say approximately 14. So on account of that, it also said approximately 13. Says more, but how is that correct? It's not anywhere near 14. So if we're close to 14, fine. We don't understand why it said approximately 14. But here it's 13 and a third, which is nowhere near 14. It's nowhere near. So how come you're using a term ka'abasri? Amra papa, what the Braisa means is as follows. It's so in between 13 and 14, 13 and 3rd. Yiseris ha-shleish esrei, it's greater than 13. Ve'inu magiyas la-ba-esrei, but does not reach 14. So in between. And that is why the Braisa calls it kishleish esrei ukar ba-esrei. It's somewhere between 13 and 14. And on account of that, when it comes to the mayor, the Braisa also said ki-es. Continues the Gemara, amra papa. So we spoke about the size of the gap, according to Ramey, being 10 amos or less. According to Rabbi Yehuda, 13 and a third amos or less. Now, what if the gap is greater? Then you must go ahead and lessen the gap, diminish it by adding more posts. So the corner posts, the double-sided posts, the L posts, are called diyumdin. But if we have too great a gap between those diyumdin, you must add pshutin, which are flat posts, which are placed along the perimeters of this contained area, to go ahead and lessen the gap between those corner posts. Says Rav Papa, Be'boir Shmoina, when the boir is 8 amas wide, the Kulei Amal Pligi all agree, the Lo Yibayinim Pshutin, there's no need for additional boards. Why? Because we have the boir being 8, plus you need to place to have an area of 2 amas on either side, as we mentioned earlier, to allow for the cow to come in. So the entire area is 8 plus 2 plus 2, which is 12. Now the corner posts are an ama wide. So the gap between those posts are only 10 amas. We started with 12. We took off an ama on each side because the posts enclosed that ama on each side, leaving us with a gap of only 10 amas between the posts. All agree there's no need to add pshutin here. That's a sheer pesa. Even Ramey would agree. On the other hand, if we have a large area, too large, if the bur itself is 12, add another 2 from each side, which is a total of 16, then when you place those corner posts, the gap in between them will be too great. It will be 14 amas. To kuli amal pligi, all agree to be in pshutin. You must add flat posts. Ki pligi, when then is there a machlegis between Rameir and Rabbiuda, mishmoina achdem esrei, when it's somewhere in between these numbers, so it's greater than 10 amis. Rameir being pshutin, since the gap is beyond 10 amis, we need to add additional posts along the perimeters to lessen the gap between the corner posts. Rabbiuda loy being pshutin, we don't need pshutin, because it's within 13 and a third amis. Says the Rav Papa, Michael Mashman, what is he coming to teach us? The distance, the allowed distance between the posts, according to Ramey, is 10, according to Rabbi Yehuda, 13 and a third. Tanina, we already learned that in the Braisa. The Braisa clearly told us these shiurim. Says when our Papa Braisa Shmilei, he never really heard the Braisa, and he came up with this number on his own, Mekamashmon Kebraisa, and indeed he's teaching us the same halacha as the Braisa. So he came to this conclusion on his own, that the required space on each side of the bar is 2 amos, as we learned earlier, that the total width of all the paris, according to Rameir, is 10, according to Rabbi Yehuda, is 13 and a third, because each parah is 1 2/3 amma. So this conclusion he came to on his own, which indeed is compatible with the Brice. Continues the Gemara. Boy mine Abaya mi Rabba. So Abaya asked Rabba the following question. According to our mayor, if this gap is greater than 10 amos, he must add pshutin. Herich b'diyumdin kishir pshutin. What if instead of putting those flat posts, he actually extended the corner posts and lessened the gap between the two posts to the required amount? So herich b'diyumdin, he extended the yumdin kishir pshutin according to the shear, which would be required to place pshutin, meaning to avoid placing those pshutim, he extended the diyumdin. Is that okay? The Ramei amount. What is the halacha contra Ramei? Meaning, perhaps, he specifically requires one to place pshutim so that they provide heker, they're indicative of the fact that he is diminishing the gap, something which is visible. Perhaps merely extending those diyumdin do not accomplish the same accomplishment. Amar lei. So Rabbi responded, Tanisor, we learned it in the Mishnah, that it's okay. The Mishnah told us that if he creates a large contained area, meaning the posts were situated at a distance, at a great distance from the bear, that's okay. But Vashi Abba Pasim provided that he adds more boards. My lav, does that not mean the Marach Bidiyumdin? We said Shiyarba Bidpasim. That implies that he's actually increasing the size of the pasan. He's extending those corner posts, and that's okay. That's not what it means. The mafish v'avet pshutim means that he increases, he makes more pshutim, more flat boards to place along the perimeters. If that's the case, instead of saying which implies that he's extending the pas itself, he's enlarging those corner posts. Should have said, they must increase the number of the boards by placing flat boards in between. Tani, so read Ashiyar Pasin. Indeed, that's the way we're meant to read the Mishnah. He's meant to increase the flat boards. Ikedamit, there's another version of his response. Amalei, he told him we learned. Tani saw we learned in the Mishnah. Uvavad Ashiyar Bipasin. He must increase with these boards. My love, the mafesh of the pshutin, doesn't mean that he's going to add the number of boards. He's going to increase and go ahead and construct pshutin. Why? No, that's not what it means. The marach b'diyumdin, it simply means he's going to extend those corner posts. Hachinam mistavra. Indeed, it seems like this is the appropriate approach. V'diktani, since the Mishnah says v'vash yabra b'pasim, which indicates he's going to enlarge and extend those same corner posts, and that's sufficient without adding flat posts in between. Shmami, no, indeed, it seems that this is the correct approach. Boy mene abayim rabba. Now, according to Rabbi Yehuda, we have the maximum of 13 amon and shlish between the boards. What if the area is larger than that? So, according to Rabbi Yehuda, is it better to place flat boards or to extend the corner boards? Yoyse mishloishes amo shlish Rabbi Yehuda mao. What if we have a great area, according to Rabbi Yehuda, which requires adding something to lessen the gap? Pshutin of it. Can he place flat boards? Or perhaps we prefer that he extends those corner posts. Why? Because a flat board which is placed right in the middle there with a huge gap on either side, 13 amos and a third on either side, that aver, that empty space, is going to be mevatel that board. So perhaps it's better to enlarge and extend the corner boards, the corner posts, which are more on solid footing. They're a double cornered posts. They're not considered to be surrounded on both sides with empty space. So perhaps that's preferred. Omar lei taniso. So he told him, we actually learned this in a brice. Kamehe mekuravin. How close to the be'er can you put those posts? You must leave room kedei roisha v'rubusha parah to allow the head and most of the body of the parah to enter and to drink within, as the one mentioned earlier. So the share of 2 amos. You must leave 2 amos of space between the post and the well. How far away from the bear can you plant those posts? Doesn't matter. I feel a kuraim. Even if the area contained within is so great and large, I feel a kur, a place where you can plant a kur, 30 sa of seeds. I feel a kuraim, or 2 kur, that's okay. Because we regard this area as a properly contained area, as a din of a residential enclosure, and therefore there's no limit as per the size. Rabbi Doimer, there is a limit. Base sosai mutter. If the era contained within it is up until 2 sa, which is 100 amas by 50, then you can carry within it. Yoisim base sosai mutter. But if it's larger than 2 sa, it's asr, because according to him, this area within the pasim is not considered to be a properly enclosed area. It doesn't have a residential status to it due to the inferior mechitzes which are surrounding this area. And therefore, we apply the general formula that an area which isn't properly enclosed is only mutter to be carried within it if it is up in to the shear of 2 sa. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Chacham responded, why is this different than ordinary construction? Do you not agree when a deer and a sar, these are animal pens, corrals, mukta, a backyard, a front yard, that even if it's large in size, afilu bas chameshes kurim, even if it's 5 kur in size, a place where you can plant 5 kur, afilu bas asor kurim, even 10 kur, shemutta, there's no concern there, because they're properly enclosed areas. So this as well, when it comes to the area between the pasim, why are you limiting it to 2 sa? Amar lehans, he told them, there's a big difference. Zu mechitza, these examples that you've listed to me are surrounded with properly constructed mechitzes. Therefore, there's no limit as per the area within the mechitzes. They're considered to be residential areas. Ve'elu pasin, but these are merely pasin, merely boards, which are surrounding this bear. So since they're improperly constructed, we give a limit of 2 sa. It doesn't have that residential quality to it. Now, it appears that Yehuda is referring to those middle posts, those flat boards, not the corner posts, which are really considered to be proper mechitzes. So when he's referencing pasim and negating them as not properly constructed, apparently what is he referring to? The post that must be placed in between those corner posts to lessen the gap between them. So since they're merely flat posts in the middle of nowhere, they're not considered to be properly constructed mechitzes, and therefore, the area within it is not a properly enclosed area. It doesn't have that residential quality to it, and therefore we're limited at 2 sa. The imisa. Now getting back to our question, if you maintain that the proper approach according to Rabbi Yehuda is to actually extend the corner posts rather than placing flat boards between those corner posts to lessen the gap, you meant to extend the actual corner posts themselves. Zumachitza, zumachitza mboile. In both cases, we're speaking about a machitza, meaning a chatzar is surrounded by a properly constructed machitza, and therefore you can enclose even a large area. Here as well, by the pasan, if he's merely extending those corner posts, which are considered to be machitzas, they're double corner posts that create a machitza, we're merely extending them. So here as well by pasan, we have properly constructed machitzes. Why are we limited to 2 sa? Why the difference between the two? So apparently, Rabbi Yehuda allows placing flat boards between those corner posts. That's what he's referring to. Says more, not necessarily so. Hachikama. This is what he meant to say. Zu teres machitza leo. An ordinary chatzar, for instance, which is surrounded by a properly constructed machitza, as a teres machitza, is classified as a proper machitza. As we see that the maximum hole that's allowed in a chatzar wall is up until 10 amis, which is considered a pesach, but past that is considered to be a breach. So this is an ordinary chatzar. However, when it comes to pasan, how wide is the gap between these boards? It's much greater than 13 and a third. Ve'elu teres pasan lehem. They're classified as merely pasan. Upritz the same, but shlesh is three amma shlesh. As you see, we allow a much greater gap between those boards, 13 and 3rd amma. So being that these are classified differently than an ordinarily constructed enclosure, you see, you allow a much greater gap between the boards. So apparently, this is not considered to be a proper machitza. This area contained within is not a properly enclosed area. And therefore, we give it a limit of 2 sa. So we leave it inconclusive whether or not, according to Rabbi Yehuda, you can place pasim between those boards, or you're meant to actually extend the corner boards. Another shaila. Tail of maslakit. What if we have a mound, a tail, or just a rab, which is a steep mound, hameslakit asara, which rises 10 tfachim, mitoich arba, from within an area of 4 amas. Meaning, if you're walking up this hill, when you've walked 4 amas, you've already been lifted 10 amas off the ground. So it's a very steep hill. As Rashi brings, we learn in Gemara Shabbos, this has a din of a machitza. So beyond it, it's considered shisa yachid. The question here is, can we apply this mound to be used as diyumdin, as those corner posts around the bear? Nidon mishum diyumd, is it treated as a diyumd? Or einoy nidon mishum diyumd? Or perhaps you cannot use it as a diyumd. So it's not really an L-shaped mound. You must view it as though it's square and carved out as an L. Right now it's merely just a round mound. Can it be used or not? Amar Leih Sir Rabba responded, Tanisu. We learned about this in the following verse. Rav Shimon Lazar, Ha'isen Sham Even Rubas. So this is again speaking near the Be'er. If there was a square stone, so instead of being an L-shaped post, it's square. Can that be used? So he says it can be used. Royin, we view it, kol she'ilu t'cholik. If you go ahead and carve out the middle of that stone to create an L-shaped corner post, v'yesh ba'amalakan, v'amalakan, and you have enough material there that if you carve out the middle, you end up with an am in each direction, an L-shaped post, that's okay. Nidam shim jumit. It can be applied as a jumit. V'im lav, but if this doesn't work, Eino nita mishum dumad, it cannot be used. Says Rabbi Shimon Loza, Rabbi Shmo b'noi shab yechem breiko eimer, he adds another halach. Ha'isa sham even akula. What if the stone that was there was actually round and not square? That can be used as well. Roy, we take a look and we view it, we imagine. Kol shi'ilu tichokik v'tichalik. If you can take this round stone and if you would theoretically straighten out the perimeter, you would turn into a square, techakik mean turning into a square, v'techolik, and then carve out the middle to turn into an L, v'yesh ba'amalakan, amalakan, there's enough material there to result in an am in each direction, nidam mishim diyumet, this can be used for a diyumet, v'im lav, but if this doesn't work, eino nidam mishim diyumet, there's not enough material there, which will result in a L-shaped post, an am in each direction, it cannot be used. It says more micromiflaki. What is the point of contention between these two Tanoim? They both seem to be saying the same thing. Mar Savar Chadro in Amrina. The first Shita, who discussed a square stone, and he said, well, if you can go ahead and carve it out to turn into an L, that's okay. So he holds we can employ one stage of Roin. Carve it out, it's good, fine, then you can use it. Trade Roin Lamrina. But if we need to apply a double Roin, like in the case of the round stone. So you first need to square out the outside and then carve out the inside. That's applying the concept of Roin twice, two phases of Roin, that we don't say, Lo Yamrin. So that's the Shita of Rav Shimon Lazar, who specifically discussed a square stone, which only requires one stage of Roin, the carving out of the inside. Umar Sarah, the second Shita held, Afilu Trey Roin Nam Yamrin. So he holds, he is Savar, he holds a filo trei royin, even if you apply twice royin, meaning you square out the outside and carve out the inside, we need to visualize two phases, two steps being done, nami amrinan, that too can be applied. So Rabbi, what he was responding was as follows. You asked me regarding the tail, this mound, this round mound, there's this ram, can that be applied as a diyumet? It depends on these two shittas. Whether or not we can apply royin twice, because this round mound requires twice Roin. Number one, you need to square it. Number two, to carve out the inside. Boy, when you have a another question. Chitzas HaKonim. If we have this L-shaped post, which is consisting of konim, reeds, bamboos, which are inserted in the ground. Konim, pachas mishleish. So they're placed at a distance of less than 3 tfachim between each konim, which is lavud. Nidam mishim dumut, can that be applied as a dumut oilav or not? Now, what would the reason not to use this? Because these konim merely have one element, a vertical element to them. They're upright. They're placed within three tefachim, so they have loved. But can you apply such a incomplete mechitza, which only has the element, the vertical element, to be used as a jumud around a bear, which in itself is so deficient because of the large exposure there? The gap between those posts is so great. The area within it is paretz meruba, it's mostly exposed. So in it itself is already an insufficiently contained area. Can you go and add another deficiency by using this incomplete jumud, which only contains a vertical element, or not? Neither mishem jumud, or not. Amar leis itom taniso. We learned about this in the price. Hayisham ilonai gader. So near the be'er there was a tree or a gader fence, a chitza sakonim, or this partition of reeds. Nidam mishem jumud. It can be used as a jumud. My love, are we not speaking about this case? Kana kana pachas mishleisha. When the kanan were placed within three tefachim of each other, so we see that it can be used. Why? So he said, no, not necessarily. Perhaps chitzas akonim is referring to an entirely different type of kanim arrangement. Gudrisa the kanim. We're speaking about a cluster of kanim. So it's a plant coming out of the ground, and on bottom, it's solid. So although on top, it spreads out in all directions. But since this kanim plant, this plant of reeds, on bottom is solid, so it's a solid mechitza, that can be used as a jumud, as opposed to the kone, which is placed next to each other, which only has a vertical element. Ihachi. So he responded, if that's what the Bryce is referring to, this cluster, this naturally growing cluster of konim, hainu ilan, this is another example of a tree. And the Bryce already mentioned ilan, so apparently it's not referring to this type of arrangement. So he responded, Ve'elamai, you're going to say, kana kana pachas mishleisha? The Braisa is referring to the reeds placed next to each other. That's what chitzas akana means, and that can be used. Haine gader. If so, this is merely another example of a fence. And the Braisa already mentions fence. So why the repetition? Elamai is lachomema. So it must be, you're going to say, Trei gavni gader. It's not a problem. The Braisa is merely mentioning two different types of gader. One is a solid fence, and one is an incomplete fence, using konim which only have vertical element to it. And that's the chiddush of the Braisa. So according to me as well, that I maintain that we're speaking about the cluster of konim coming out of the ground, the question was, why does the Braisa need to mention it once it already spoke about an ilan? Trei gavni ilan. The Braisa wants to speak about two different types of trees. And the chiddush is that even this cluster of konim, which fizzle out on top, don't really have enough material to visualize a carving out, this is still okay because we focus on the bottom where it has solid material. Ikad Amri, there's another version of this discussion. Gudrisa de Kanim Kamaboyli. Abaye asked of Rava regarding this cluster of Kanim going out of the ground. Gudrisa de Kanimai, what is the halacha? Can it be used for a jumud or not? Omar Leiser responded, so it seems to be contained in the following price. Hoyasham Godero Ilan. If there was a fence or a tree, or chitzas akonim, or this partition of reeds, nidam mishum jumud. It can be used as a jumud. My love, are we not speaking about gudrisa de koni? Your very great case, this cluster of konim going out of the ground, which can be used as a jumud. So it's more loy, not necessarily. Perhaps, when the Braisa says, chitzas akonim, it's referring to the other example, kona kona pachas mishleisha. When you have a properly shaped post, an L-shaped post, which consists of konim placed within three tefachim of each other, so since this post is properly shaped, it's superior to this mere cluster of konim coming out of the ground. And perhaps that's what the Braisa allows to be used for a jumud, but not the cluster of konim. Ihachi. So he responded, if that's the case, if that's what the Braisa is referring to, haine gader. This is merely just another example of a fence. And the Braisa already mentioned a fence. So why the repetition? Apparently, the Braisa is referring to a cluster of konim. So he responded, Ve'elamai gudrisa de koni. So what are you going to say? I was speaking about the cluster of konim. Hainu ilan. The Braisa already mentioned the tree. Why the repetition? Elamai is lechomema. So evidently you're going to say, Trei gavni ilan. Why would the Braisa mention two types of trees? Because they're two different types. This is not your standard tree, although it's solid on bottom, but it fizzles out on top. It doesn't have the ability to be carved out like your ordinary tree. The Brayis is coming to teach us, even this is okay. So there's a chiddush here. There's a regular ilan, and this type of ilan. Hachanami. Here as well, meaning according to my opinion, that when the Brayis speaks about chitza sakonim, that can be used for a diumet, it's referring to the kana that was placed alongside the next kana. The Brayis is telling us, that's suitable for a diumet. The question was, that apparently that's not what the Brayis is speaking about. Because the Brayis already spoke about a gadar offense. Why would the Brayis repeat itself? You know what the answer is? Trei gavni gadar. These are two different varieties of a fence. So the Brayis first speaks about the properly constructed fence, which is suitable for diumet, then proceeds to describe an improperly constructed fence, the chitza sakonim, in which case the kana placed next to the other kana, this only contains a vertical element to it. And the Brayis is telling us that even this can be applied for a diumet. Okay, time for a brief review of today's daf. The Gemara began by discussing one who is mekabel yisurim ba'ava. He accepts with love the hardships that Hashem offers him, and he views it as though he's giving a carbon, makir b'karbon to Hashem, sacrificing and cleansing himself of his averus to earn the eternal reward. The Gemara tells us that the fire of Gehenna is not shalit, it doesn't completely destroy even the Peshi Yisrael, who are protected with the spiritual protection due to the fact that they're filled with mitzvahs kerimai. The Gemara gives us seven names for Gehenna, and we also discuss Gan Eden. We have several questions that Abaye asked of Rav. We know that according to Rav Meir, the maximum space allowance between the two corner posts is 10 amos. What if the gap is larger than that? He must go ahead and lessen the size of that gap. The question is, do we insist that he places flat boards along the perimeters of the enclosure to lessen the gap between the corner boards? Or is it enough that he's marach b'dyumdin, that he extends the corner posts to lessen the gap in that manner? We had a similar question going to Rabbi Yehuda, who tells us that we have a maximum allowance of 13 amos and a third between those corner posts. What if the area is greater than that? Can he go ahead and place flat boards to lessen the gap? Or do we insist that he extend those corner posts to lessen the gap? The Gemara proceeded to tell us that even a stone, which is a non-L-shaped item, can be used as a diumet. We employ the concept of a royin. We visualize, we imagine as though this stone has been carved out and been formed into an L-shaped post. All agree, chad royin amrin, one application of royin we apply. What about trei royin? We have something which needs twice royin. For instance, a round stone. So number one, you need to square the outside. Number two, to carve out the inside. But machlek is whether or not we apply trei royin. The same concept will apply to a telem slaket, this large mound in Shisram, which is round. So you need to, number one, square it, and then carve it out. Machlekes will be whether or not we apply trei royin in this case. The Gemara concludes with a question regarding the following two examples. If one constructed an L-shaped diumet by using konim, reeds placed upright next to each other within three tefachim, does that work? So there's a positive element here because they're constructed in L-shaped form. There's a negative element because it only contains a vertical dimension to it. What about Gudrisa de Kani, this cluster of reeds growing out of the ground? This has a positive element to it because it's solid on the bottom, it has both vertical and horizontal elements to it, and can be carved out into a properly shaped diumet. The disadvantage here is, because as you go up this plant, the konim go in all different directions, which does not provide us with enough material to be carved out into a diumet. So do you focus on the bottom or on the top? And the Gemara seems to leave both questions unresolved.